Hi, and welcome to the 396th episode of the MWA podcast. I'm Kyle Barton. I'm here with a special guest host, Brian Obst. And tonight we're visiting with David Duyard, chairmaker, instructor, designer, and a great friend of the show. So welcome back to the show, David.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
And I can't wait to talk to you and see that all the stuff that you've been up to. It's really fascinating following your feed the last few months. So looking forward to it. But before we do that, let's dip our toes in the woodworking news. So I guess I'll do a Lost Art Press recap the past few weeks. They have a lot going on, but some of the things that have brought to my attention is a lot of the recent posts that Chris has been making on chair making techniques have been really great, and he has a lot of posts out there about, you know, how to do how to use the Lee Valley metal reamer, some stuff about doing spindles, making sure your spindles fit correctly, and all kinds of interesting little chair making techniques. Many of these he has like a quick 1 or 2 minute video on, so it's really fantastic. So get out there and check it out. And he does have a couple of new tools, one in the works and one now available. And he has the Crucible Dovetail Template, which I think is a version that used to be sold by Woodjoy Tools, which I think was a two-part type thing. This one seems to be a little bit, for lack of a better word, better made, but using the same basic template. And I think it's something that Megan uses religiously in her dovetailing. So she was able to talk the folks over at Crucible, I guess that's Chris, probably poke him enough till he actually made it. But I've heard nothing but rave reviews over that little template there.
Did it come in just because it has two ratios on it?
Yeah.
Can you pick the ratios, or are they just standard?
I think they're standard.
Like 1.4, 1.6.
Yeah, and I've heard
1.618.
Yeah, and I've heard that they might come out with another version that has another two ratios on them, but that seemed to be the most popular ratios, at least that they're using every day. I don't know. Yeah. I don't myself do a lot of dovetailing, so I think I have a guide that's similar to this, but not near as fine a quality, it looks like. I think mine is, I forgot who even made it. It might have been something I picked up from Lee Valley years ago.
Yeah, they've been around for quite some time. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Lost Art Press one does seem rather beefy compared to some of the other commercial choices.
Yeah, yeah. So it looks good, and it's, you know, relatively inexpensive. It's $49, so you can head over to Lost Art Press, and they have a little link there to Crucible Tools where you can buy all their tools there. So check that out. Also, they're coming out with a new, I guess, drill extension for quarter inch hex bits called the Go Drilla, which is, I love the name. He posted about a prototype, and it looks really, really interesting. Someone that spends a lot of time, like myself, with drill and drill bits. And I do have quite a bit of quarter inch hex shank bits. And these do look absolutely, this little extension looks pretty neat. It actually has a clamping mechanism similar to a router collet that locks that bit into place. Anything for a quarter inch hex shank uses that standard little connector, which, you know, secures the bit, but the bit still wiggles in there a little bit. So it's not nice and firm, not something you'd want to drill a chair blank or a C blank with. So this looks like it's pretty neat, pretty neat. I think he said it's going to be coming out hopefully sometime this summer, and should be relatively inexpensive. He's saying they'll be about $43. Apparently they have the material cost and labor all locked in pretty much at this point. So anyway, it should be pretty cool. Do you use any quarter inch bits in your work, David?
No, I don't. Okay. I have them, you know, and yeah. I use them, but I have the same thing, you know, the bit extensions that they had, they just don't give a secure lock, and drill bits wiggle, and all of a sudden your hole's not the right size anymore. So I stopped using them.
Yeah.
Stopped trying to use them.
Yeah, I have in my extensions, you know, there's that half inch coupler that I use and a lot of people use. There is, I did find a solution to get a quarter inch hex shank bit in there that uses a little bit extender. In fact, I'm gonna have a video on this in not too long. I've been threatening that video for a while now too. But anyway, but it basically uses a couple of set screws, and the thing itself is a half inch in diameter, so it fits right into that coupler. So it secures it fairly well. But what Chris has worked up here is a lot slicker than that. So I'm very interested to see when this comes out. Probably very interested to pick one up too.
I'm gonna guessing from his description that is you're gonna buy it by the rod size, the rod length.
I think it's gonna come with a rod, a 12 inch rod. But then if you want to, you know, something longer or something, you can just buy that hex rod from. There's a lot of sources. He mentions McMaster Car there. So, yeah. And they will sell. I've actually bought some hex rod for a different project. It wasn't quarter inch. It was, what was it, 7/16, something like that. I bought for a different thing I was working on. But yeah, you can buy it from there or Granger or a number of dealers like that. And they usually sell them in certain lengths. Or, of course, you can always just buy a big one and cut one down with the angle grinder or whatnot.
Yeah.
So. Hey, late to the discussion, but if I could just chime in. Hi, Sean.
Hi. Welcome. Look
who's sorry here. Sorry for welcome. The mess up.
You know, I was going to see how many edits I would have to do in this podcast, and here we go.
No edits. Just let me jump in. It's,
Sean, the last guy in's got to buy woodpecker tools for the other three people.
Oh, yep. Man. Okay. Well, I'll get you whatever the next $5 add-on.
Everyone gets woodpecker stickers. All right.
Yeah. Everybody. Yeah. Congratulations. You know what? I might have a couple lanyards laying around. I could just send you. No, but honestly, I just pulled it right up. And funny enough, talking about this bit extender, I apologize if someone brought this up before, but I got an extender. Let me measure it with my hand here. It might only be a foot long. It's not like super long. Mm-hmm. But it's made by Bosch.
Mm-hmm.
It is a spring-loaded quarter inch. It actually grabs a quick connect.
Yeah.
And now I've never put a bit in it to see how it wobbles, but I've driven, adapted, hex nuts with this thing.
Right.
At length, and it works fantastic.
Yeah.
I get the putting a spade bit in it would make it a lot more stress on the connection, but
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I've found. Yeah, if you're putting like the little bits and stuff like that, they work fine. But yeah, once you get the any of those drill bits, they kind of they'll work fine, but mm-hmm. I mean, they won't work fine for fine woodworking, but they'll work fine if you're needing to drill a hole in something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, so for the people that do that, the tradesmen and DIY type stuff, yeah, I think it's perfectly fine, but you're drilling spindle holes. You can't have any variance. It'd be too tight for your tenon or too loose, rather it be too tight than too loose. But even then, you know, it's a pain. You want to make sure tenons match to your bits. Yeah.
You know, a wobble to get loose or a wobble to be out of form is a total different. Like that's, a round hole tends to want a round peg in it and vice versa. So. Yeah. Keep it secure and straight. So yeah, what I've got works, from what I do, but for stuff like this, like you're boring with extensions, that's obviously a little more important to keep it taut.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a slick thing they put together there.
Yeah. My issue with the early ones was not getting a clean entry hole because it's mm-hmm. too wobble.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I can definitely see that. Yeah. That's so. But anyway, so check that out. Like I said, that was a blog post, but the tool will hopefully be coming soon. Well, next up, I wanted to highlight that Daryl Peart has a new book coming out called the Artisanal. No, I knew I was going to say artisanal. I knew I was going to say artisanal just looking at it. Okay, The Artisan Furniture Maker. The boy, that word artisanal gets thrown around too many times.
A little too much.
It's crap.
Yes.
But The Artisan Furniture Maker, A Creative Survival Guide. So this is supposed to be a interesting book where he delves into, of course, some green and green stuff. So if you're a fan of the green and green like I am, it's probably a no-brainer to pick this up. But he's also going to go into a lot of stuff about design. And in fact, I think that's the main approach to this book, is about design. And he incorporates a process that he calls design DNA. So the book is open for pre-order right now on Amazon, and it's $18.95. So it's relatively inexpensive. I think it's in a paperback type format. It's not going to be the size of a paperback. I imagine it's going to be bigger than that, but kind of like his other books. And it should be a great book. I've already pre-ordered my copy. So, and I hope we'll have Daryl on as it gets closer to publication or right thereafter. I think it's supposed to come out in December of 2022. He said it might be a little bit after that, but hopefully it's around December. So, but, you know, like I said, you know, be on the lookout for that. And if you want to go ahead and pick one up, I'm sure this is a good price at the pre-order at $18.95. Just head over to Amazon and look that up. Again, that's The Artisan Furniture Maker, A Creative Survival Guide. So
absolutely. Good. More information to come, I think, as the image isn't even on Amazon yet. I'm sure as they're getting closer to release, you'll be able to say a little more about it.
I think in his post, he said they were in the final edit. So I'm sure all that will be populated here
soon. With a release now, you know, what, 7-8 months out, you know, they got time to fill all that.
Yeah. And if you've had any of his other books on Green and Green, they're absolutely fantastic. He goes into a lot of good techniques, as well as the history and all of that stuff of the of both Green and Green and design, and the halls and their execution of those designs. So absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, could really you imagine going to the Gamble House with Kevin Costner? That would be the probably the best 6 hours of your life.
Yeah.
I was going to say there would be something of a residence involved in that, I think. I don't think it would be a quick trip.
Yeah.
On steroids.
I did get to go to the Gamble House with the guy with the Greek last name that I can't pronounce. It does a lot of the restoration work there at Gamble House and a lot of the other Green and Greens. And it was one of those behind the velvet rope tours. So they gave us little flashlights where we could, you know, look at everything, because the Gamble House is incredibly dark inside. So you couldn't touch anything, but you could get as close as you wanted to without touching. So it was pretty cool. And he went through everything, and you know, because he's reproduced almost all the pieces in that house. So it was pretty cool too. I would say it was probably on par with being there with Daryl. But anyway, it's pretty cool thing. I don't know. Have any of y'all been to the Gamble House or any of the Green and Green places?
Well, I have never been to California, Kyle. Come close.
The last time I was there was last summer, and we were my wife, how did she describe it? She said it's not part of the journey. So she didn't want to go.
Okay, all right.
Well, as I always say, it's pretty interesting, because you go to the Gamble House and you see all of that, and then you look around and go, oh, there's another Green and Green house. There's another Green and Green house. There's another Green and Green house. And it's like, oh, they built them just like we did, you know, like a modern subdivision.
Yeah,
you know,
they were the developer of their time, right?
Yeah, of course.
They're everywhere. I lived in Southern California for 8 years. So,
oh yeah,
there's tons of arts and craft stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, it is fascinating. And I think it is real close to the Rose Bowl too. So every time there's a game playing, you can hear it from the Gamble House.
Well, how about that?
Yeah, so there you go. I'm sure that wasn't there when they built it, but who knows? It might have been. Who knows? But anyway, we'll check that out. Like I said, The Artisan Furniture Maker over at Amazon.com for a pre-order. Next up is Woodpeckers has a new tool.
No way.
Yes.
Wow.
It's the Auto Angle Drill Guide. I think if you remember, they came out with a drill guide that just, it's basically something that you can attach a cordless or corded drill to, and, you know, take the drill to the work. And they had one that did a 90-degree one, and now they have one that, you know, you can vary the angle of it. And it's kind of got an interesting little mechanism. Mm-hmm. And it's in the same format of as most of these drill guides, where it's got two rods with a spring on one rod and a chuck that you attach your drill bit to the other side of that chuck, and it spins a bit and you plunge in. It looks fairly interesting. Of course, you know, I come up, you know, I'm almost afraid to comment sometimes because I got something that kind of sort of competes against it. But
I was going to say they're directly competing against the Kyle / BB Custom Tools drilling guide for chair blanks, etc.
Yes. On my seat drilling guide. But I don't think so. I mean, they're not coming at this at a for a Windsor chair type market or anything like that, like mine. I think this would be, you could probably drill out a seat blank, but it would be difficult, just because there's not a lot of ways to, you can clamp this thing to your workpiece, but there's not a lot of room to put clamps on this thing all around. And you could definitely run out of room trying to drill some of these spindle decks or even arm post holes. You might be able to get one clamp on it, mm-hmm. maybe, and I would not want to do that. Also, I think the thing is probably fairly top heavy with the chuck up there.
Yeah, it definitely looks like it.
So it's going to be, you know, it's I don't think it's made for seat blank and stuff of that nature. Not saying you couldn't do it, but you know, it's one of those things. It looks very well done. The only thing that, you know, kind of surprised me was I never really could get a close up on the angles, the degree angles. And I finally found it in the video.
In the video, yeah.
Yeah, it looks like everything is in 1 degree increments. So that's not quite fine enough for chair making. I like to have that at least half degree increments on there.
Are they detented? Or is it a smooth travel through that? Okay, it's a smooth, there's markings every 1 degree.
Yeah, it's markings every 1 degree. It's a smooth travel, and it looked like the cursor was pretty big, too. So, yeah.
I mean, in the end of it, no matter what style you use, is it possible to put a little magnetic angle finder and tilt and lock until you're in the proper degree?
Yeah, that's a good point, Sean. In fact, I thought of that myself. Unfortunately, that big thing up the front of it's made out of
aluminum. Yeah, exactly.
You might have double stick some sort of little metal piece there to put your... you could do that. Again, this is one of these tools. If I hadn't come up with mine, it would be, okay, how can I jig this thing up where it would actually work, you know? Mm-hmm. But with that said, the only downside of this tool... you know, is of course the cost.
Well, there's a huge cost. Yes.
It's a huge cost. I mean, it's just the basic one. Introductory price is $500. And with the with the deluxe one with,
600.
Yeah. Yeah. It's $600. So
you get the guide, all the extension rods. Yeah. I mean, they've got a doodad to hook on to all four sides of this thing. So you can set positive stops on sides and edges. And, I'm right now just kind of struggling to find a use case where I need some angle. Let's just arbitrarily say I need to drill 34 degree angles across a board.
Mm-hmm.
Across a piece, whatever it is, I just don't see that. I can't think of a case where that's happening a whole lot. Mm-hmm. Yes, four corners for a stool.
Yep.
On a square top or even a round top, and you can locate the holes and drill them. Yes, okay, you've got a case, but that's about as far as I can stretch the idea. I'm closed minded.
Mm-hmm. I could see it being handy for some of the scene work that we do.
Okay.
You know, because if you want to like mimic vegetation, you know, you want the plants, the fronds to come out in different angles, and that would be quite helpful to sink a dowel into, you know, a piece of OSB or plywood.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's a fine furniture type thing other than maybe a stool. Yeah, but I could definitely have some framing uses. I don't know how big of a drill bit you can there without taking your life in your hands, but.
Well, and that's too. I mean, in the image they have of the what appears to be maybe an eighth, maybe a 3/16 inch bit, but that bit is 6 inches long below the chuck.
Well, they did in the video. They did put a Forstner bit in there. It looked like about an inch or so. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's sure. I like using shapers too, not
Well, there, Mafal, if you're familiar with those tools, they make a lot of tools for the timber framing industry and you know, big stuff like that. They actually have something similar to this, but on steroids, that is mainly for timber framing.
And I like that you're talking about like the chainsaw,
tenon
cutter.
Yeah, but they got a drill type thing that for drilling, you know, huge holes and stuff like that. And it's pretty interesting, but it's like $850.
Sure.
You're not that far away from that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're creeping up on some timber framing quality or cost at least.
Yeah. Now,
and not to compete, you know, because they're not competing with you, but not to compete with them.
Yeah. Your
jig can do that for half the cost, right?
$300 less the cost.
There basically.
You go. Yeah, exactly. So mine could do everything that this could do. And that's probably one of the things I need to actually think about doing is marketing mine outside of where I am currently. So sure.
Yeah, I mean, there are use cases for all tools, you know, outside of what they were particularly designed for most cases. Right.
Yeah.
And so, yes, I mean, you could expand beyond Windsor chairs and maybe find a new audience, that's, I think your BB Custom Tools is a perfect opportunity to do that. It's not BB Custom chair tools, you know, it's tools. Tools are tools. Yeah. Tools can be used for a lot of things.
Yeah. And the only thing that mine might not be able to do that this one does do is actually use inside a cabinet. You could use mine inside a cabinet, you know, depending on how, you know, you could run out of room with my jig inside a cabinet where you wouldn't in this case.
Yeah. This, I mean, that's the thing. This has a small footprint, but there's still a question of how do you clamp it down?
Yeah.
How do you clamp anything down? Any drilling guide whatsoever? If it's small enough to fit in a hole, that's great. Mm-hmm. But if you can't secure it, that's a whole nother thing. You know, do you have to have a whole series of long reach, wide mouth clamps that can get deep in? Yeah, I mean, or you can fashion something. But
yeah, I think it's fashion something or using some of these extension rods and stops that they sell. Mm-hmm. I think that might help you keep it stable with a hand and something like that. You might be able to keep it stable, you know. But, you know, that's why my jig has these long runners on it, just so you're able to, you know, find a clamp where you can get two clamps on it without, you know, without contorting yourself or having to come up with some other type of solution. So, yeah, but like I said, for what it is, it's, you know, out of all of these that are on the market, this is definitely probably the best of the bunch.
It seems pretty slick for sure.
But you are going to pay for it. So,
I mean, I have
there's the a lot. Version. Yeah, but there's a lot of aluminum in this thing. I mean, there's a lot of cost. I can definitely see. Yeah.
I was a little disappointed to see it maxed out at 40 degrees.
I was curious on that, but I think it's how they designed the pivot that kind of strains them.
You would think 45 would be the goal.
I mean, it's a nice round number, right?
But even so, you're going to need a special bit to drill anything really over about 20, 25 degrees. I mean, you can use a Forstner bit, of course. Anything else, you're going to need like the chair maker's bits we use with the long center spur so that you can crank it over.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. You get into a lot of complexity. Even a Forstner bit, like a Forstner bit on a low angle is fine. It has a bit of a, you know, all the cutters around the edge can do a lot of work. But if you're talking about some precision hole at some angle, some distance in of a large diameter, you're probably going to get into a stepping operation where you're going to get a small something to start it, something to center the next bit to come through, and on and on and on. I mean, there's machining involved in this at that point, depending on the complexity.
Yeah. For instance, on my guide, my guide's designed to go 30 degrees either way. So it'll go plus 30 degrees or minus 30 degrees. You can go more than that. You can go to whatever degree you want
if you use
it a Sidewinder style. And I think one of my videos, I show that. I go, but you have to have a bit that'll make that hole.
Yeah. I mean, that is, you know, your mileage may vary depending on your tooling and risk you want to take, kind of thing.
Exactly. Like,
there's all that involved. I mean,
yeah.
And that's the burden of every toolmaker, is making something that works for some and could work better if you take certain liberties.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's what it is. You know, yeah. Good on you, Woodpecker. You're doing good work. It's just a tall price for this one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tall price, but like I said, I can see how they can justify the price because they got a lot of aluminum in there, a lot of machining, a lot of bearing. So yeah, it's not a cheap tool to make. So.
Oh no, no way.
But anyway, well, let's move on. So Sean, do we have a Patreon shout out this week?
We sure do. It's been a minute. I've been busy, so I've been away from this. But we always like to give a good thank you to our Patreon supporters. Today, we're going to give a shout out to Ken Woolley, a.k.a. Joint Plane Saw. All one word, no spaces. If you want to be like Ken, please join us join him in supporting us at patreon.com/MWApodcast.
Yeah, Ken might be in the market for this Woodpecker's Auto Angle Drill guy because he just picked up some nice machinery. And I know I saw a hammer joiner planer, so, you know.
Dang.
Yeah, Ken may be in that Woodpecker's market.
Mm-hmm. Could be.
Could be. But anyway, thanks, Ken. Thanks for your support. Really appreciate it. Well, let's move on to what's in the shop. So, Brian, what are you working on?
So, about halfway through with the stool, I was working for my wife's sewing studio. And then we have a dog who's just about ready to, you know, pretty sizable Labrador. Mm-hmm. And she's got a partially torn ACL in her back, one of her back legs.
Ooh.
So I decided to get her like a memory foam mattress so she'd be a little more comfortable. Then I'm like, well, you just can't have a mattress on the floor. So now I got to make her, you know, we'll call it artisan, you know, white oak bed frame.
Oh, only the finest.
So of course, in true Ope style, I'm just like, well, do I need flying dovetails or no, you know?
Of course.
So I'm going to whip that up probably hopefully this weekend to get that out of the way. And then
that's good.
Yeah. And you gotta make those legs. You gotta cut those legs and glue them back together so you got that.
The matching green. Yeah, the green.
Yeah.
His name is Green. Because she'll appreciate that. She'll probably chew on it.
I bet. No, and it's funny you've got a young lab. I've got a 13-year-old Labradoodle who has an arthritic leg, and so only has use of three of them. And so we are fighting to make him comfortable in a much different way. He's still laying on the floor. But now we've had to install runners everywhere because he can't handle hardwoods. He'll just slip out and lose it. You know, it's old dog, you know, it's unfortunate, but there's little much we can do at that point. It's more just as the doctor said last time we saw him, he's lost muscle. He has arthritis bulging in areas. It's not coming back anytime soon. And so it's more of just making him comfortable as long as we can reasonably, but, yeah, make your young doggy comfortable so that he'll have a happy, lappy, you know, yappy life.
And then we're also I'm getting ready to redo our pantry. And the room is maybe 9 feet long. It's kind of L-shaped a little bit. It may be 5 feet wide, 6 feet wide. And it's turning into the most complicated thing ever because I want to use all the vertical space that's in there. I'm like, well, now I need to make an integrated, nice wooden step stool that goes inside of a, you know, into a part of a cabinet and coffee station and all this stuff. So now I want to move some lighting around and electrical around. We'll see. Hopefully get that rolling this summer.
Awesome.
I was just looking at I was actually looking for screws and I found a new supplier out there and they actually sold some of that like library type hardware and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. Who was it? Customs.
Library hardware?
Rolling ladders.
Yeah, rolling ladders, that kind of stuff. Okay. Yeah, custom service hardware. Yeah, I have to look it up. They had all kinds of solutions. I mean, I was looking at them for screws. They have really good prices on screws, but you know, they sell everything. I mean, you know, even cabinets and stuff like that. You know, ready-made cabinets, that kind of thing.
And I'm also trying to decide: do I want to do, you know, full inset doors again, like I did in the laundry room, or, you know, half overlap, full overlap.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to modernize the house room by room, but not deviate too much from, you know, adjacent spaces. So, and then you gotta do all the color choices. And for whatever reason, I decided to torture myself and milk paint these cabinets, the exterior of the cabinets. And it looks great. You know, and, but people try and if they would ever want to reproduce that, if ever got damaged, you know, good luck.
Yes. Uh-huh. So what are you top coating with?
I've done a couple things. I've used Osmo And then the last chair that I painted, I did Walrus Oil, the finish, furniture finish from Walrus Oil. And that, you know, I took a few coats, but it's not too shiny. It's got a nice sheen to it, but it's kind of like in the middle of the road. So I might try that again. And it doesn't stink. You can, you know, you can get exposure to it. It's not going to make you, you know, chemically sensitive at all. It's pretty much all natural stuff.
Nice.
That is nice. I'll have to try that out. Cool. So, John, what are you working on?
Getting less soreness in my legs. I'm 3 days post marathon.
Oh,
so
okay.
I just did that on Sunday actually, and it's getting much better day by day.
Did you beat any personal records?
No, I didn't. It's my second best time.
Well, that's good.
We got a little Texas weather for 2 days.
Okay.
For no good reason in April in Northwest Ohio. This is coming over weeks and weeks of going out to our kids' lacrosse games and bundling up and gloves and hand warmers and all this other stuff. Saturday, we were in Indiana for a game and got sunburned slightly because it was 70 something. It was beautiful. We were sitting right on the turf and it was great. Sunday at 4:30 in the morning, it was 68 degrees.
Wow. It's warm.
It is warm for us. It's super warm for us. I've run this race, the half or the full marathon, 8 or 9 times now. And it's normally 40 something in the morning, not 60 something in the morning. It's a way, way different. It's just whatever, weather's weather. And so like by the end, there was a nice wind, which is great, but it was in the 80s on Sunday. We have a frost warning tonight. and yesterday's high was, I think, 40.
Yeah.
So Midwest is fantastic. It's flip-flop. And now they're saying like, oh, we're having a slow warming, but we're not going to see 60 again, I think, for another 2 weeks or whatever. So just crazy. I just happened to, you know, the race day was unexpectedly warm, especially after coming out of a winter of training.
Yeah.
Where I don't think I ran without gloves but once in training. And here I was wanting to take my tank top off mid race because it was so warm. But it's a very, very, everything, every race is different. Everyone has their own little complexities. But other than that, this is totally not woodworking related. It's awful. But my wife has gotten us, and I am getting into it, into birding a little bit, not like crazy birding, although she would love to dive headlong into it. But we just took a walk this evening at our local metro park, and we saw a barred owl and babies. We saw a great horned owl and babies, and we saw a pileated woodpecker, which doesn't normally come around anywhere near the Midwest, as far as I can tell. Which is really kind of cool. That's the woody woodpecker. That's what he's named after or formed after. It's a big old woodpecker. That's kind of cool.
They're big birds. We have them at our house.
Do you? Yeah. They're big. Yeah, for sure. I mean, we get other types, the smaller red-bellied and hairy. There's another type. But
black-capped.
Yeah, we don't get black-capped, I don't think. But yeah. But like, the pileated, I mean, it's probably a foot from foot to head. You know, and then whatever it's got, the wings are beautiful. We saw it flying and calling and stuff. It's really neat.
So are you getting some new binoculars and all that kind of good stuff?
We have decent binoculars. We got those a year ago. But my wife tonight especially was pretty excited. Nice, and we passed a couple other people. This one woman that we've seen before. There was a very small bird called a piping plover that was at a local, is it a metro park? It's a state park, I guess. And it's, these things are so tiny and they're rare. And so they're tracked like crazy. And there's all these Facebook groups and people, you know, check their migration. And we found out the dad, you know, who was here and they had 4 babies, one of them died. So 3 of the babies survived. The dad wintered in somewhere Florida. You know, and he was identified down there, and they got little rings on their legs. They get marked and tracked and all this other stuff. Anyway, so we saw that last year. It was kind of a big deal because it was the first time that it had been in Northwest Ohio in like 40 years. So again, birding. But unmistakably, there was this woman who has this camera lens that I could drive through. It's just enormous. And it's wrapped in camouflage. And
of course.
It's just unmistakable, right? Yeah. In local circles, it's unmistakable. She just happened to be at the park tonight looking at the barred owls. Mm-hmm. And she pointed out where the mom was out of the nest and the baby was in the nest and all this other stuff to us. And we started talking. And as we walked away, I said, okay, honey, we need to get you a new lens.
500 millimeter. Yeah.
Oh, that's even small. I looked up one. I was like, oh, look, this one, it's only $12,000. And it's not nearly. And she's like, yeah, hers is bigger than that. I said, yeah, I know. Like, we're not really trying that. But that's the rabbit hole to go down is like, how do you want, what are you doing this for? It's just for entertainment. We're not actively conserving in that way. We have plenty of feeders. We're getting lots of cool like flora and fauna in our backyard. A couple of migratory birds that we have not seen before this year came through. Really neat. It was a summer tanager. Look it up. Really cool. Okay. Not red like a cardinal, but kind of a deep orange red with yellow streaks in the female's wings and stuff. Really neat.
Well, I have to ask you, have you seen the movie The Big Year?
The Big Year? No.
Yes. You need to see it. It's a comedy, but it's pretty good. It has Steve Martin, Owen Wilson, and Jack Black in it. And it's about birding.
2011. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yep.
Is it streaming? Is the question.
I don't know. I'm sure it is somewhere.
I will find that movie.
Yes.
It's on Disney Plus. Done.
There you go. Watch it with your wife. Y'all.
That's Friday Night Pizza movie. Got it.
Yeah. Y'all will die laughing, but it's all about, I think, just to give you a synopsis, it's all about these guys competing to see how many birds they can see and identify during 1 year or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like these top birders of the.
Yeah.
And it's pretty, you know, anything with those guys in it is going to be hilarious. And it is pretty hilarious.
So aside from the birding, our bee saga.
Oh, yeah.
We did have a hive survive the winter, which is great to see. We ordered a new package for the one that did not survive and got that package early in March, mid-March, before tax day. Can't remember exactly. But anyway, installed that package. Great. It got decently warm for a tick, and we checked on how that queen had been accepted, and then we checked on the other hive and found a dead queen in the hive that survived the winter. So we're in another holding pattern of will this hive survive?
So you don't know if they're trying to requeen it or not, or
there was no sign of that, but honestly the population had dropped so much over winter. It was weird because we saw the hive active when we identified the queen maybe 3 weeks before. And we looked and we were pulling and looking for eggs, looking for larvae, looking for any of that because it was starting to get warm. We saw pollen flowing, all this other stuff. And we just happened, as I was pulling frames out, I saw below there was a little pile of bees and one looked a little bigger. I went, that's a queen. And we picked it up and sure as hell, it was a queen. She was dead on the floor. So the hive should go into reparation mode and make a new queen. We're curious to see, and we haven't really, we tried and there are no immediate queens available, quickly at least. And that's fine. Worst comes to worst, we get a new package of bees and install them with a new queen. But, this hive, hopefully, cause we're feeding it still, will be strong enough to create a new queen. That takes time. We haven't looked at them because, of course, after that, it went down into the 40s except for 2 days last week, and we didn't want to mess with it. So we just made sure they were fed and good and just let it go. But now, again, we're threatening freezing. I insulate the boxes over winter. I still haven't pulled the insulation because we're at a risk of freezing.
Well, if this keeps up, you're going to be a bee serial killer, I swear.
I know. No, oh, and that's the dad joke.
They'll stop sending you bees.
Yeah, right. The dad joke of the day. What do you call a bee who eats other bees?
Sean?
Hannibal Nectar.
Hannibal. Oh,
so how I was gonna make a Pope joke here. How do you know when the bees elect the new queen? You see like a little white smoke come out of the hive?
No, and actually we saw two different flavors of that last year. They will create a queen a queen cell, which is different than a normal larva cell. The typical hexagonal, you know, field that you see in cartoons, they hang 90 degrees to that and much longer. A supersedent cell and a swarm cell are actually located differently within the hive, and you can tell by where they're putting it by what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Once you know, it's actually kind of wild. So no, when they're requeening, there is no white smoke. Interestingly enough, in the case that we stopped a swarm from happening last year, where they had built swarm cells, and that's when they do multiple queen cells, because I think the queen says, "That's it, I'm out of here," and they're gonna I'm gonna bounce, and she leaves enough to let them start a new, like a new queen. We caught that last year and moved her, the existing queen, and some of the colony into a new hive and let the other one survive. Those queen cells, and there were, I think, 8 or 9 of them. And when we did that, that is a strongest survives case. It's more of a no holds barred kind of thing. If the first to emerge is strong enough, they will go around and destroy the other ones. They'll rip them apart and kill the larva. It's crazy. Like I haven't actively seen it, but I read up on it, and it is literally, in that case, when they're kind of spitballing, they're saying, we don't know, but let's try 6, and whoever's the best, there is one, and they will kill all of the other, potentials.
Just having the Hunger Games.
It kind of is. It is. And without the controlled chaos, but it is. And that the thing is that queen, that was the split. We split away. The one that emerged after the split and was the new queen is the one that overwintered and just died. We can't win.
Payback's hell.
Yeah, paybacks are hell. it's complicated. And the more people I tell about it, and they're like, well, why do you do it? I'm like, well, okay, we're not in the honey business. We do enjoy the hobby.
Yes.
We do enjoy what the potential they have to help the gardens and flowers around us and trees and everything. I mean, where we are, I know in Texas it doesn't ever stop, but the silver maples are just popping right now. Mm-hmm. The leaves are just emerging, so there's pollen there for bees to get after. And it's interesting because they can literally, decide if a tree survives a new season or not, if they're there or not. And so we're hoping to help our little ecosystem with what we've got.
Cool.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. So anyway, how about you, Kyle? Are you doing anything actually woodworking related?
No, not this week. Anyway, probably not next week either. We'll see. No, I'm repainting my exterior doors. So I have 3 to do. I've just starting on one. So,
and, I saw your post about this.
Yeah. So yeah, I took the door off the hinges, put together my little, OSB sandwich, to close off that doorway, which actually worked really, really well. It's basically, a sheet of OSB on one side of the door frame, the exterior side of the door frame. And then I got, lag bolts going through that. There's like 4 lag bolts, so 2 at the top, 2 at the bottom. Both lag bolts go through, or 2 of the lag bolts go through one long piece of 2x4 that's then clamped to the other side of that doorway. So I saw it on YouTube, and it actually worked pretty well. I was like, this works really well. It's really secure. I mean, no one's going to break through that door without a chainsaw, basically.
I was going to say, so it's partly security, partly critter control. I know your environment tends to be fairly humid. I'm sure there's something about just keeping the environment, not exactly. The outside.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, it seals really well. Yeah, I was thinking,
That's kind of,
well, I might have to put some tape around it or something like that. But after I got it done, I went, no, we're good. it's like,
that's wild.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. So anyway, so I got one done, and or one on sawhorses in the shop, which, it's like, once you have a door in your shop, you really can't do much else. I am glad. It's like, yeah. But anyway, so I got that in there. So we'll get that prepped and painted probably put a couple of coats of paint on, and then get that one hung and, you know, rinse and repeat two more times and I'll be done. But so we're doing that. But on the tool front, on the BB Custom tool front, we finally got some merch in. So nice. We have stickers and T-shirts. And they've been selling good. We still have a few of the black ones left. We're pretty much sold out of the small ones, except for, I believe, the blue ones and small. We're pretty much sold out of the blue ones, except for, I believe, we might have a small or medium left. And we are going to order some more. And I think we'll do a new color, too. We're still deciding on that. So. Be looking for that coming up, but yeah, they're pretty cool shirts. They got our little monogram logo on the right front and then our big shield logo on the back, and pretty cool.
Nice.
And they're really nice t-shirts too. We got some they're a little thicker than normal t-shirts, so that you know, these first ones are really nice. They got a nice collar, really well done. I was very impressed with the quality of the materials and construction, so pretty cool.
Pretty upsetting that the model for the shirt is a stool. It's not on.
Yeah. In fact, me and Patrick were talking about that just yesterday, going, yeah, we need to get some models, but you know, neither one of us want to do it. I don't know.
You need a mix. It needs to be yeah. One of you guys and then some college co-eds.
Yeah. I do have a new video to shoot. Hopefully I'll get to that probably the first next week. But yeah, I will be wearing the t-shirt for that.
There you go.
Anyway, you go. I'm thinking you might see my back first because, you know, that's where the shield logo is and I'll have to turn around or something. Anyway, be looking forward to that.
Cool.
And I'm, you know, talking about who's got video content, maybe I just pay Brian to do me some shirt promos or something. So, but that's about it. So, David, what are you working on?
We've been playing catch up, but our shop's pretty busy. I'm finishing up another continuous arm, and I've got two sets of dining room chairs that I'm working on. In fact, went and roughed out some spindles this morning for a set of Windsor low backs, and I've got a set of ladder back dining room chairs that are done. And otherwise, you know, playing with some new designs and got a coffee table to do that's way overdue and prepping for some more classes. So I've been pretty busy.
Yes. You finished it seems like it was yesterday, but it's probably a month or so ago, a big settee with, like, I don't know, 200 spindles in it.
Yeah. It turned out beautifully. I was really, really, really happy with it. It's a contemporary version of a Windsor settee and 6 foot long, so hold three people comfortably.
Yes.
And you know, kind of a little bit more a modern take on a Windsor, but I'm real happy with that, how that came out. I'd actually like to build an armchair and a side chair to go along with that. I was happy enough with the design.
Cool.
To do that.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous piece. So for listeners, go out there and check out David's Instagram. Check that out. But yeah, check out that settee. It's absolutely stunning. And the spindles go on for miles. So it's absolutely fantastic. Well, so tell
all
us.
All 39 of them.
39.
That hurts my back just looking at it. How much shave horse time that is.
Last time you were on the show was, I think, a week or so before your surgery that you had. So tell us, how's your recovery going?
Yeah, it's coming along good. Surgery was very successful. It floored me for several months. I thought, okay, 6-8 weeks out, I'll be back up and running around and doing stuff. I was like, that's not happening. 12 weeks, 14 weeks, I was still pushing to get part-time work done in the shop.
Yeah.
And, but it was successful. They removed a precancer cyst off my pancreas and, you know, rearranged all the plumbing and stuff. And it's, you know, but it wasn't cancerous and I'm free from all that. So that was a really, really good, really good outcome. It just slowed everything down for a bit. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I know probably not only
that was good. And, yeah, I say, you know, the the outreach and support that I had was absolutely tremendous and completely overwhelming. It was really, really wonderful to see it all. It's completely unexpected and was very, very nice. You know, and I had a bunch of people that, you know, were coming over and helping, you know, in various ways. You know, Travis Curtis picked up my class. I was due to teach down at the Florida School, School of Woodworking down in Tampa. And, you know, Kate's class there, and which was a huge help in January because there was no way I was going to be able to make it. And, you know, a few other people around here, John Maloney and a couple others coming in and just doing all the heavy lifting that I just couldn't do, you know, moving big slabs around and turning out blanks and helping with making chair parts and things like that. It's been the outpouring support's just been absolutely amazing.
We appreciate all you do, David. We really do. and all our support to you is fantastic. I was going to say, I think that, when you told me about your surgery and stuff, I'm sure everybody was like me and kind of, you know, freaked out just a little bit when you mentioned the word pancreas. And it's just like, but I'm glad everything's going as well as it is. So all the best to you. And I hope everything keeps going well.
Oh, sure.
Yep. Thanks. Yep. Well, it's, I'm able to eat and drink and starting up the exercise now. In fact, we've decided to once again get back to the Yale New Haven Smilo Cancer Center, which is where I had my surgery. And they do a bike ride called Closer to Free, and 100% of the proceeds go back into the cancer center and into research.
Oh, wow.
So that, I'm sure I'll be posting on it, but the Closer to Free bike ride happens every year. And, you know, a few years ago, you know, we raised about $7,000, Lisa and I did, to give to that. So I got back from you.
Well, great, great. We'll keep us apprised of that. So, well, I'm glad to see that, like I said, that your recovery is going great, and that's fantastic. And it seems like you must have impressed your doctors a little bit, because it seems like you actually recovered a little bit quicker than they thought you would.
I don't know about that. Complaining a lot.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I saw you up and around, and I was just like, wow, that's a lot quicker than I thought. But I know you were in good shape before you went into the surgery, so that's always good.
Yeah, I was hoping to be back, you know, in the shop close to full time at 8 weeks, and I was lucky to get an hour in a day at that point.
Yeah.
And so I was pretty frustrated, and they said up front, minimum of 3 months. And I'm going, yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
You can't trust these doctors.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Unfortunately, they were right this time.
Yeah, I don't know if we introduced Brian up front, but he is a doctor, so.
Yeah, I'm an anesthesiologist, and we used to take part in some of these bigger, like, Whipple surgery, you got a cancer. Those, what you had is a tremendous undertaking, so I'm glad you came out unscathed.
Yeah,
awesome. Yeah, I had a Whipple procedure. I was in there for over eight hours.
Wow.
So I was under for quite a while.
Yes. Well, I'm glad you're back. And what are some of the first things as you were coming out of the recovery that you were working on? I know you had some commissions that you wanted to get to and stuff like that.
Oh yeah. What is this? I'm still finishing them up. I've had my students and clients have been tremendous. They said, yeah, we'll wait for it. So I've got a coffee table that's way overdue. I've got two sets of dining chairs that are overdue in this arm that's overdue. And so I'm finishing those up. Hopefully I'll be cleared up by the end of May is the hopes.
That's good.
That I have. Good. I'm back to being in the schedule.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see.
Well, what about your class schedule? How's that filling out at these days? I think you got your 22.
Yeah, I'm full. I've got a class that starts on May 8th, and that's full. And my next class is at Connecticut Valley School of Woodworking with Bob Van Dyke's group.
Oh,
and that's in July. I purposely didn't schedule anything in June in case I really needed to play catch up. Mm-hmm. And building a fan back side chair.
Oh,
and it's
nice.
A great venue for anybody. So it's really nice. And I've taught the sack back Windsor there, and I had a PERT still class there in March that I taught. And, you know, it's, you know, like I said, it's a wonderful place and Bob's a great host and he really runs a nice tight school and it's really top notch.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be good. And, you know, I've got a rocker class in August and another, you know, intro to ladder back class in September. And then I'm pretty open and I'm thinking the way things are right now, I'm probably going to add a couple of classes, for the fall, probably in the next 2 weeks or something. And I'll get that out. I'm trying to figure out what the fall schedule looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, well, that's fantastic. Are you going to do any of the Jenny Alexander chairs? I know you recently made one, or at least I saw one that I think you made.
Yeah, I've had a lot of people ask about it, you know, mm-hmm. and the way I built it is kind of an anti Jenny Alexander green woodworking board because I jigged it up differently and I used the drill press, you know, so sacrilegiously I built the Jenny Alexander chair.
Yeah.
I didn't use a bracing bit and, you know, but it's an easy chair to make and it's really quite comfy and really quite light. I like it. It's sitting right next to me at the moment. So, and then I've had people ask me to do a Democratic chair as well.
Mm-hmm.
My only trouble is I've never made one.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if I can figure out how to make one, then I'll start teaching it.
Yeah. I believe it's made all with table saws and routers.
Yeah.
I'll stop only.
Yep.
I'll stop only.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, my table saw right now is mostly a storage surface.
Oh, yeah. I hate it when they get like that. My table saw, not so much, but my router table is exactly like that. It's nothing but storage. I'd hate if I actually had to use it. It would be like 30 minutes to find somewhere to put everything. So how are the sales on the draw knives and scorp sheaths that you've come out with?
I'm sold out.
You're sold out. So fantastic.
It's been, it was tremendously successful. Sold out right now. Yeah. In fact, I was over with my local supplier and they're in the process of doing up a whole new batch. And then I'll actually start promoting them a little bit. So they're not even on my website at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting the website revamped so I can actually take orders through the website.
Oh, and, okay, good.
Because the last time everybody had to DM me and, you know, a couple messages back and forth and, you know, we got everything worked out. But they really went over really, really well. And I'm really, really pleased. But I'm out of the InShape knives covers. And I think I only have a couple of the draw knife covers left. You know, and it really spurned out of not being able to find a cover, you know, trying to travel with the scorps.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. You get those things sharp, a little nick, and it's like, oh, I can't believe I got to sharpen this thing again.
Yeah, I know. And they're fantastic covers.
They look great. I don't have one, but I'm sure they function fantastically. It seems like something that it was just you were the right person at the right time to finally just make something like that because it's great. I mean, it's needed.
Yes.
I've got these guys literally down. Yeah, it's a double layer canvas sailcloth. It's got a leather guard liner in it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. The right material and the right source, that's a winner for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I like about them is the actual canvas material and you have the Velcro closures, which I think are much easier and somewhat more secure, I think, than some of the snaps and on some of the other ones I've seen. And then, like you said, you know, it forms perfectly around the scorp and then it's got that leather insert in there to protect the edge of the blade. It's a great design and it's wonderful and I'm glad they're doing well for you. And we're happy to promote them in any way.
Somehow I miss this because every time I travel to like Greg Pennington's, I'm wrapping a t-shirt around my InShave and you know, with of course with held into place by blue tape, and this is a lot more legitimate method here. So I'm gonna have to keep an eye on your website when these get up.
Oh yeah, you gotta ride in style, man.
Yeah, exactly.
No more t-shirts and blue tape. Oof.
So is there any else upcoming for you that you'd like to talk about?
No, I've just been it's been trying to catch up.
Mm-hmm.
I've got some other limited production work I've been working on with some local designers. You know, I make these little stools for some weavers that teach seat weaving. You know, so I'm making 70 to 100 of them at a time. And so the limited production work is kind of nice because it helps keep the lights on in the shop, you know, and then it allows me to play on new designs and other things. And so I have fun with that, and it gives me good variety of what's going on, you know. But the I think the big thing is I really scheduled the end of May and June so I can play on some new designs and get ready for the fall. I've had a lot of nice comments on some other ladder backs I've been doing, you know, more contemporary style and things.
Yeah. So tell me about that. So what kind of, I know that was one of your things in recovery that you're going to concentrate on is coming up with some new designs. So what are we talking about? We're talking chairs, settees, a little bit of everything.
Yeah. Chairs, some settees, some more contemporary style Windsors that I've been working on. Like I said, that bench was the first,
right.
That came in. I'd like to see an armchair and a side come through in the same design. And then I've been taking some of the, you know, from the Jenny Alexander to some of the other Shaker to the Brian Boggs ladder backs and kind of looking at the designs and how do I get to make them a little bit easier and, slightly different style to kind of match, you know, what I like. And so I've been doing that, and I've got a project that I'm working on for that. So that's been, I've got all the legs bent up, and now I've got to figure out, you know, spacing and angles and getting jigged up for them and stuff like that. I've put a few prototypes together, and I'm kind of liking them. So I think by the end of June, some stuff up on Instagram that are around and people can see.
All right, cool. Now, tell us a little bit about your design process. Do you sketch up, or are you working off small prototypes, little models, or exactly how do you go about creating your designs?
I've tried using SketchUp for chairs, and I'm just not good enough.
Yeah.
And I've tried to take a couple SketchUp classes. In fact, I signed up for the fine woodworking one. I'm waiting to get some more information on that, you know, but with all the compound angle curves and
right,
you know, rake and angle splays and everything else going on, I really need to be able to figure out a better way to do that. But I generally go from a sketch to a full scale, full size drawing, you know, like kind of piece of plywood, and then use that as a, you know, and then use that as a template, and then I can make bending forms directly from that and do measurements directly from that and figure out angles and things like that, you know. And the big part is trying to figure out what's a good, comfortable size chair, you know, and what are the angles you want to see. And, you know, because some of the chairs, you know, that I've been making are just huge, and the other ones are like small. And it's like, I want the Goldilocks effect. Give me that middle ground kind of thing. So I've been looking at a lot of different books and, you know, going around to some various, you know, the New England's loaded with all kinds of services, you know, from the Yale Furniture Gallery to the antique shops to the, you know, to the museums up here, just have a plethora of originals that you can go and look at. And it's been wonderful to be able to do that and say, well, I like the idea from this chair and this idea from this chair and this idea from this chair, you know, and kind of putting them all together.
Yeah. And hopefully they're all comfortable in the end. So, yeah.
Right.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
So to be able to sit down and, you know, the goal, you know, my goal on this is always I want to be able to sit at a dining table with a group of friends and be comfortable for hours, you know.
Yes.
Sitting around and talking and having drink and laughing and having dinner and stuff. And to me, that's the sign of a good chair.
Mm-hmm.
That if you can sit in that chair for a couple hours, not be uncomfortable, then, you know, life is good.
Right.
Yeah, I'm a little anxious about them. I have one that I'm calling my cocktail chair. It's essentially a riding arm ladder back, except it's the riding arm is level, so you can sit outside on the porch and have a beer.
Oh.
Oh yeah, yeah, because they're canted in. Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, I'm one of those people. If I get slightly a little drunk here at the house, you will find me jumping from chair to chair. Now, is this one comfortable? Now, is this one more comfortable than the other one? What makes this one comfortable? You know?
Yep. We don't have any matching chairs in our house.
Yeah. You
know, we've got lots of chairs, but none of them are the same. They're all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're the same way. I got a lot of mismatches. I guess most of my dining chairs match. It's just an evolution on one design, so each one's a little different,
angles. I think I sat on most of your seating, but they're all a little different.
Yeah. So, that's absolutely fantastic. So I can't wait to see the new website that you have. I'm glad those Draw Knife and Scorp Shees are doing well, because you are absolutely right about the Scorps or the end shaves. No one has really had a good protective cover for those, so I'm glad that challenge has been addressed. And we'll be looking for an order there from Brian. So
it just reminded me, David, are your draw knife sheaths, are they the same pliable type of material? Because I have a curved draw knife that I don't do.
Yeah, exact same.
Yeah. Yep. I have a curved draw knife that the Lee Nielsen draw knife cover is too stiff to make that turn. So I'm thinking that might be able to make it.
Yeah, no, this will work. Yeah.
Yeah, it's basically a heavy canvas.
Yeah, this will work. Just
okay.
Yeah. 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 It's basically, I was about to say, it's basically a heavy canvas with a leather insert to protect where the edge of the blade goes, to protect that area. And yeah, it should work fine with a curved draw knife. What kind of curved draw knife do you have? Are you talking about which direction is it curved, or is it one of those that's curved in both?
It's, it's got the, like the curve in the mid belly. It was, John Schweitzer, Black Bear Forge, made. I bought it in America, actually.
Oh, okay.
I don't use it often. I'm more of a bevel down Lee Nielsen draw knife person, but I could never find a way to get a cover in this thing. I guess I could probably heat form one of the leather covers, but this sounds like a much better.
Well, with that, let's move on to our fortnightly beer choices. So I'll start us off. So I am drinking the Bayou Buffalo Brewing Company's Dream Sickle, which is a fantastic beer. I think I've recommended this before, but I saw it in our store, and it's really nice. It's orangey, dreamsicle-y, and
a little orange, a little vanilla.
Yeah,
sour? Is it a sour?
It's a little sour, but not too bad. It's not something Sean probably wouldn't call it a sour. Let's put it that way. But yes, but it is pretty good, and it's nice, easily drinkable, and not too bad on the alcohol. It's 5.9%, so
there you go.
So there you go, and it's like I said, Buffalo Bayou Brewing Company. That's a local Houston brewer, but you can find them. I think you find them pretty much in the southern part of the U.S. I think they have a pretty wide distribution. So look for them at your favorite beer emporium. So Sean, what are you drinking?
Something not sour, so there. But
okay.
I went through the store, and this caught my eye, and actually caught the guy as I was checking out. It's this local liquor shop, and he goes, "What? This is Bell's Oberon, a well-known wheat beer. I'm pretty sure everyone can get this. Bell's is out of Michigan, so maybe not.
I've heard of Bell's, yeah.
Yeah. Bell's Oberon is a very nice kind of a summer wheat that they do. This is a tropical Oberon. So I don't know if it still has oranges, but it says it's got mango, guava, and passion fruit.
Okay.
Which makes it cloudy, pinker than the normal wheat color. But it's very good and rings in right about yours. It's like, I think it's 5.8% alcohol. So, but it's rather tasty. You know, I don't like a wheat to be terribly heavy, and I guess they're not heavy. They kind of, they almost are chewy. If they're kind of robust, and it's getting there. The cloudiness maybe just tricks the eye a little bit to think that it may be a little thicker than it is, but, it's actually really, really good. And I don't know if it's a limited release or if they're going to start bringing this out more. I see more and more of these like fruit additive things in brewing. So,
well, I have to look for that. Cause my wife loves the wheat beers. Me not so much, but she absolutely loves them. So yeah, I'll have to check that out for her.
Yeah. You have to see. I mean, I don't know. I do not know their distribution, but if Bell's can get to you, and if they're spreading this that far, it's worth a pickup. It's a nice turn on the normal Oberon, which I always do enjoy. It's a really nice wheat beer.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So Brian, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking a beer. It's called Zipped by the other half is the brewery based out.
It's out of New
Washington,
York.
D.C. Washington, D.C., I think.
I thought they were in New York. base for you. Maybe not.
Oakey Street, Northeast Washington, D.C. So, yeah, it's
all right. Okay.
Other half makes great beer overall. I don't think I've ever had a bad one. This is an Imperial IPA. This is 8%. So one or two of these
Imperial will, going.
Yeah, it'll kind of sneak up on you and punch you in the face if you're not careful.
That is who I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
I have had Other Half. They are absolutely fantastic. I was thinking it was a New York beer. But I just looked at it, and they have a bunch of different locations. So yours is probably being supplied out of Washington, D.C. Because looking here, they were founded in New York. So anyway, my buddy and my partner in BB Custom Tools, Patrick, who's from the New York area, brought me some Other Half. And they were fantastic. And they have all kinds of little cute pictures on their beer. So,
there was interesting you said that. There was somebody in one of the craft beer groups that I belong to that they wanted to do their PhD thesis on the better the can art, the worse tasting the beer. And they were like, dead serious.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple local breweries that still do I credit them because they're distributing out of small batches. But they're the paper sticker on a tin can.
Yes.
And the art is varying, whatever. And some of them are just like bad text and it's just really bold. You know, the one, it's like Crunchy Hippie and that covers half the can and there's nothing else.
Yeah.
And it's just the side of Dharma beer, you know, it's just like, just right there. It's like, doesn't tell you much more than just the, then there's I can't think of right off the top of the head, but there's a couple breweries out there that have just wild anthrax artists doing drawings on their stuff, and you go, you wonder if there's a correlation between is it good? Well, it doesn't look great, you know, like who knows?
Yeah, the best beer I ever had. I used to have a neighbor who traveled overseas for work. And he would go to a monastery in the Netherlands and bring back Trappist beer. And you could tell it's a different country because there was absolutely no text on the bottle at all. There was just an embossed Trappist on the glass. And that was it. And it was fantastic. It was at that time, it was one of the best beers in the world, according to Untappd. And he unfortunately moved away. So.
The few Trappists that are distributed that I could get, I've loved every one of them, but they're all very, they're simplistic because then you can read up on them. They're like, and they only open their doors X days of the month and whatever.
Yes.
And it's really, really kind of cool to be, steeped in the tradition and the quality that goes with it.
He says there's something different about having a monk put a couple cases of beer in your trunk of your rental car.
I don't
see that here in the United States.
That is wild.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic. Well, so, David, what are you drinking?
I'm back with my my local brewery, Legitimus Brewery, or Brewery Legitimus. And they have a New England IPA called Dr. Strange Haze.
Oh.
And it's turned to be one of my favorites.
Oh, well, fantastic. Right in time before the new movie comes out.
Chris is Belgian trained, so he comes from a European beer making background, and the stuff he makes is fabulous.
It's really
Are you near Alchemist?
When you come make a chair, when you go to a brewery.
Yeah.
exactly.
No.
So you're not near Alchemist at all? That's more Vermont.
Yeah, that's further away. Yeah. There's actually like four breweries within 20 minutes of our place. So we found this resurgence of local craft brewing, and they're all doing pretty good stuff, but Legitimus is still my favorite.
Yeah, I mean, the New England IPA is known at least nationwide, if not worldwide at this point. There's a big boom up in that neck of the woods.
Yep.
Yeah.
I have to go to Vermont this summer for a wedding.
I'm
gonna go, leave as much room in the car as I can for the way home.
Yes.
we'll stop
on by, we can load you up.
There you go. Yeah. Just add all those to your Waze trip and make them on the way. Or on the way back, whatever, however that works.
Yeah. On the way back,
You live in a real tough location there, David. You got four breweries within 20 minutes drive, and what, just down the road from you is a ski resort, and Yeah. Yeah. It's, and what you have, like, world renowned trout fishing in your backyard.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. We got, we're 2 hours. I'm only 2 hours out of Manhattan, but we've got bear and bobcat and fox in the backyard and a ski area a mile and a half away and a trophy trout stream that's across the street. So life's pretty good.
Yes. Yes. No doubt about it. Well, with that, David, where can folks find you on the interwebs?
Yeah. So websites, DavidDuyardChairmaker.com. It's D-O-U-Y-A-R-D. And on Instagram, it's DDuyardChairmaker.
Fantastic. And Brian, what about yourself?
I live pretty much just on Instagram at Opes Woodworks. I'm still, even though Elon bought Twitter, I'm still holding my Twitter ban.
Okay. Okay. You're probably safe there for a little while anyway. But anyway, and I guess we should have mentioned this at the top of the show. Mark will be back. Mark is just on a little vacation this week. So we do appreciate Brian filling in for Mark in a pinch. So greatly appreciate that, Brian.
Sure. Thanks.
And you can always find me on Instagram at Barton.Kyle or at BB Custom Tools on Instagram at bbcustomtools.com and on YouTube under BB Custom Tools and Kyle Barton. And you'll get that video I've been threatening about soon. So anyway, Sean, what about yourself? Where can folks find you?
Pretty much everywhere, including Untappd, because Brian mentioned it. You can find me at SeanW78.
All right. Well, fantastic. So, Brian, do we have any reviews?
We do. Regarding episode 394, Evan Court, who is, I guess, a host, and this is probably my favorite podcast name of all time here. It's called the Don't Drink Paint Water podcast. and Evan says, awesome. And then we have another review here from Daniela Flint, who put 3 fire emojis. We appreciate appreciate the reviews for the show. We're always welcoming your feedback.
And that just about wraps it up for this show. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on the podcatcher of your choice. Just search for the Modern Woodworkers Association. And while you're there, please leave us a review. You can follow us on Instagram at MWA_podcast. And if you'd like to support the podcast, go over to patreon.com/MWA podcast. But the best thing you can do is tell a friend. Word of mouth goes a long way in sharing our discussion.